sugar feeds yeast. And so either the ileocecal valve, which is on the right side, or the valve of Houston, which is on the left, one or both of those valves are going to open up to try to get the carbs out of there before they ferment and create problems. The physical manifestation of that is pain that hurts when you sit too long or that sort of stuff. That SI joint is going to get more weak and unstable with this yeast overgrowth. Because of that, then the muscles on the same side of the neck will turn off. So if you eat a carbohydrate that doesn't sit well, doesn't metabolize well, that side of my neck will be hurting.
This is such a cool episode. So I am going to be talking with Dr. Scott Verzal, which I believe I'm saying his last name correctly. I made him say it for me like 1,000 times so I could remember it. He is a doctor of chiropractic. He has a book called The Headache Advantage. So I wanted to talk about headaches and hormone headaches and all that kind of stuff because I thought that would be extremely valuable for you guys. But my goodness, we went on, well, we did talk about the headaches, but I took notes. I took so many notes. We talked about why we get certain headaches due to like poor methylation or liver not working correctly and how that would actually manifest before you even get a headache, like in different pain points you have in your body. And we even talked about the things that cause pregnancy nausea. We talked about tension headaches. It was so good. So I think that you're going to take notes. I think you will find it extremely valuable. So if you're listening to this while you're driving, don't take notes while you're driving. But once you get home, look at the transcript and definitely take some notes and grab his book because I love it when I have a guest where I learn a ton. And I think you're going to really love this episode. Welcome to the Balancing Hormones Naturally podcast. This is your podcast host, Leah Brueggemann. I am a functional diagnostic nutritional practitioner. Here you are going to get actionable steps you can take today to start balancing your hormones naturally so that you can maximize your menstrual cycle for painless periods, more energy, and weight loss. Let's dive on in. Hey, ladies, we are here with Dr. V, and we're going to be talking about headaches. So I know that we've had a couple episodes on headaches before, but specifically, we're going to be coming at them from a different angle. And we're going to let you guys walk away with some things where you can really take some actionable tips today to like start feeling better from your headaches. And he also has an awesome book called The Headache Advantage. So we'll have that linked as well so you can dive deeper. But I want to go ahead and give you the floor for a second. Well, actually, more for a second, probably for the next 40 minutes. But can you tell me like why? Why headaches? Like why did you want to write a whole book about headaches?
Like most in this field, I had headaches myself. You know, as a young teen athlete, I was a natural bodybuilder and started getting pounding headaches every time I worked out. And, you know, they started taking me out of the gym and, you know, I did the young stud thing and tried to work out through them and it just make them last longer and longer. And, you know, over-the-counter medications had nothing to offer at that point. And, you know, then went to the family physician. They said, well, you might have an aneurysm. Don't work out. Oh, you know, the big scare. Right, right. I was 19 at the time, right? You know, yeah. Not a problem in the world as far as, you know, that goes. And so they said, you know, did a CAT scan and said, well, you don't have an aneurysm, go see a psychiatrist. And
wow.
You know, offered, you know, no real help. So when the headaches came back as hard as ever, a year later, a chiropractor in the gym, I went and saw him and he helped me out and felt a ton of stress come out of my shoulders, felt just so much better. I mean, I just never forget leaving that visit. It was about a 20-minute drive home, just feeling like, man, I need to be feel this way forever. I need to be able to share this with others. And that really started my chiropractic journey. Ultimately led me to chiropractic school. And, you know, backing up a little bit, I had quit eating sugar at 14 years old, being when I was diagnosed hypoglycemic and never turned back. I mean, so it's literally, not to give away my age, but it's been many decades since I've had, you know, refined sugar that way. And so, you know, with that nutritional background, and then with my structural kind of natural bodybuilding mentality and muscle correlations, that ultimately led me into chiropractic school because it merged the structural with the nutritional, and then ultimately into applied kinesiology, which is the muscle organ correlate, where the muscle organ correlations come from. And it just gave me this fantastic tool to be able to figure out whatever walked into the office, you know, whatever anybody had, and using reflex patterns and muscle, you know, pain patterns and things. That then gave me the tools to identify the seven different, ultimately, the seven different patterns of headaches. And so that's why I ended up having to write a book, because nobody else was talking about it. A lot of this comes from acupuncture. So, you know, I did the due diligence, went through the internet and all the books that were available, thought for sure acupuncturists have to be talking about this. And they weren't. Nobody else had really categorized them this way. And, you know, the first question I typically get, you know, well, what about migraines or, you know, my hormonal headaches and so on? They all fit into one of these seven, one or more of these seven patterns. And so then the reason the book became, or is called The Headache Advantage, is because for me, clinically, the location of the headache really tells me the priority of the health concern for that patient.
Oh, yeah. No, that's very cool. I think sometimes bouncing off of that, when you said the advantage, so you know where to look, I think sometimes we always look at our symptoms as this like big curse, you know, this horrible thing. And I mean, symptoms aren't great, but the cool thing about them is that they guide you on where you need help before it becomes an even bigger issue.
100%. I mean, that's, you know, the first thing I do with the patient is sit down and find out what their priorities are, right? Why'd they make the visit? You know, how can I help them? You know, and they'll go through their list of, you know, 15 different things. And, you know, the key question for me is, you know, if you have a headache, what location or what area of the head hurts? And so then I know, hey, they've got 15 symptoms that are maybe hormonal and digestive related and stress related. Whatever the location of the headache tells me, that's where I'm going to start. That usually will take care of all the other signs and symptoms. So it creates an advantage from our head pain, ultimately.
That's very cool. So can we jump into the seven categories? Can you tell us the seven different types of headaches?
Let's go. Okay. So there are seven patterns. There's a right-sided headache is the most common. That is a gallbladder concern. And so typically then we would look at foods, triggers, or supplements to help the gallbladder, and then to eradicate the right-sided headache. Then there's the left-sided headache. That's going to be a stomach problem. When it's a left-sided headache, that's typically a low stomach acid type of a problem.
Oh.
So poor digestion there. Originally, I had left-sided and frontal as both stomach issues. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I realized that the left side is low stomach acid. Frontal headache is more kind of an ulcer scenario where chronic stress breaks down the stomach lining and then manifests as a frontal headache. So that's, you know, your yuppies or, you know, people that are overdriven, right? Not mm-hmm. resting properly or taking a Sabbath day and that sort of stuff. The other interesting trigger for the frontal headache is, you know, especially if there's a lot of worry and stuff. Sorry, people, but that's the person that we want to look for Lyme in, kind of my unique offering in that whole Lyme arena is that all the Lyme pathogens, whether they're a bacterial, you know, spirochete based, viral based or parasite based pathogen, the Lyme, the common thread for all the Lyme bugs and the thing that makes them stealthy is they inhibit sulfation, a pathway in the liver. And that sulfation pathway is where stress hormones get broken down. So kind of one of the manifestations potentially with Lyme, one is there's going to be the cortisol is not breaking down. So also serotonin is going to be high. So that's the obsessed and freaking out worry kind of aspect of that so often predates the whole Lyme manifestations. But then the frontal headaches are something that could go along with that as well. So we got right, we have left, we have frontal headaches. And then for your audience, we'll get more into, well, and then whole head headaches, like a headband is typically a colon type of a headache. And so that was a headache that I had back in my youth, that ultimately got corrected at that point by a C2 adjustment. The second cervical in the neck tends to go out when the colon's not functioning properly. So he adjusted my neck and took care of my headaches. And, you know, then ultimately I figured out, hey, these are the dietary changes. These are things I was doing at the time to compromise colon function and get rid of the cause, if you will, of the headaches. Chiropractic, you know, acupuncture are great things. But ultimately it's somewhat temporary relief unless we look at, until we figure out, you know, what the food triggers are, what the nutrient deficiency is, or here comes open this can of worms or what the emotional trigger might be. So we can talk about that too. So we've got the frontal headaches. And then for your audience, the three that are going to be relevant is what I call the Cyclops headache, the third eye, kind of right between the eyes. That's going to be a pituitary issue. That one I actually learned about in school. The one thing I learned about in college, you know, thing that really got me thinking about these referred pain areas for headaches was that central little headache there. And they said in school that it was because the pituitary was swelling and referring pain to that area. So if pituitary is compromised for whether it's from because of a virus or because of the barrage of hormonal yo-yos that, you know, that you ladies get to deal with so often, you know, if that puts stress on the pituitary, then that's going to refer pain here. And then, so if the pituitary is struggling, then that can affect hormones. So the hormonal headache is a bitemporal or around kind of just in front of both ears. So it's going to be equal on both sides. That's your hormonal headache. And that's typically,
Okay. So this is different than the one that's right here. So you have the one that's like your third eye, and then you have, you said both sides at the same time, like.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so the both sides at the same time is going to be your estrogen metabolism problems, which is kind of where we're going to probably go most of the rest of the show. So we can talk about all the liver pathways there. So that's a poor, it's hormonal, but I mean, lion's share, most of the time it's estrogen metabolism that's setting up that bitemporal, both sides headache. And then the third in the hormonal front for this audience would be the tension headache or the head pain in the back of the head. And that's going to be a thyroid, typically a low functioning thyroid problem.
Huh. That's cool. Okay. So that's really interesting also as well, why the estrogen metabolism and like liver is both sides. Like, cause when people, I feel like get herxing headaches, like when their pathways aren't open and they try and put a detox too fast, like that's where they get their headache is there. So that makes sense.
Right. Right. So the key pathways to break down estrogen, the main ones really are going to be methylation. That's a week's worth of podcast on its own. but we got methylation, then we've got glucuronidation and cytochrome P450 enzymes. Those are the three key liver pathways to break down estrogen. I mean, yes, we have sulfation, we have some of the others in there, but those are the ones that typically are compromised that set up those estrogen dominant symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I guess let's work backwards then. So let's start with that one. The both sides, the poor estrogen, like where can they start with, let's say food, let's say to bring in food to help with glucuronidation, methylation, enzymes, all of that, like where should they start?
Great question. So, I mean, starts with blood sugar, ultimately.
That's so much.
Because we're in America. I mean, blood sugar, it's a pandemic. It's everywhere, right? And for my, you know, ladies that are in the transitional season, typically it's too much fruit to kind of surprise people often tend to, I mean, we think fruit is healthy and that stuff, but it's still a pretty high carbohydrate, you know, high sugar sort of food. If they're eating fruit by itself without a good protein, you know, protein and fat to stabilize, then they get that insulin dump and insulin causes estrogen dominance. And then the insulin, the estrogen dominance then inhibits the thyroid. So I call that the double weight gainer. Then that's the gal that ends up with the pear shaped figure, you know, the larger trunk. that's a typically chronic estrogen metabolism concern brought on by poor metabolism of carbohydrates or consuming them too often. So stress can cause us to not utilize insulin very well, causes insulin insensitivity. So then we end up with a hypoglycemia. If we don't modify, if we don't correct it, make appropriate changes, then ultimately then insulin insensitivity becomes diabetes or compromises like that.
Because right. They keep spiking it and then it drops way too low afterwards.
Right, right. Yeah. Eventually the body's just like, we can't deal with all this anymore and starts kind of shutting down, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then we have a little bit more work to do ultimately. The other challenge from a lay person perspective is, you know, if they've had blood sugar problems ever since COVID, if it's okay to say that on the podcast. <That's fine. laughs> the challenge with COVID is that that retrovirus that COVID is, it tends to damage whatever was the weak link. And so that's the long hauler problem. And so, you know, in relation to what we're talking about here, if they already had a pancreas challenge and then they got exposed to COVID or got the vax or both, you know, God forbid, then that can be that kind of fatal damage to the pancreas that we then need to look at supplements to rebuild the pancreas get them back on track. And I mean, that's the kind of person that struggles, you know, they've struggled for 2 years since they had COVID, you know, those types of stories that we all hear.
Yeah. I'm so glad you talked about blood sugar balance, because sometimes they need to hear it multiple times from other people. I think that we touch on blood sugar balance at least once every episode. Like, we don't have whole episodes on it, but like, it's because every function comes back to, if you can take all the supplements, you can do all of the things, but if that core foundation is all over the place, it's like you're just dumping money down the drain.
Chase your supplements with a Coke.
yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. Okay. So what a great one. See, ladies, I talk about this for a reason.
So what just real quick, the supplement, I mean, if you don't mind talking about specific companies, and I do lecture for Standard Process. I mean, that's one of the primary companies I deal with. So the product line that will fit for these long hauler symptoms is whatever product PMG is for the gland organ that got compromised from COVID. So in the description we just had, that person's going to want to take pancreatrophin, PMG, protomorphogen, to heal and rebuild the pancreas. And then that backs the immune system off, the autoimmune attack from attacking that pancreas, and can get them going back in the right direction. We need to offer hope, right? Let people understand that there are answers.
Yeah. No, that's very cool. I even have some people do star codes. Like the pancreas SAR code is another good one. Which again, I feel like those are just slow and steady, you know, wins the race there when it comes to it. But
and you see those slow down or halt the autoimmune attack then as well?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's just it helps. It's kind of like what I find that they do is it just kind of helps that organ start to, it like gives it a break, like do what you need to do, fix yourself, come back into the world.
Okay. Nice.
Beef organs are truly like nature's multivitamin, but I'm with you. Kind of think they're gross. I still am a little grossed out by them. And yet I know I need them. Okay. And I use Paleo Valley Organ Complex because it's encapsulated and I don't have to taste it. And it does an amazing job. So I am not new to beef organs. I've used beef organs before I came across Paleo Valley. And I noticed one distinct difference. I know I've told you this, but I'm going to tell you again. I took these. I used to be able to take the other beef organs whenever. And I took these Paleo Valley ones in the afternoon, probably around 2, 3 p.m. I had such a hard time sleeping and I couldn't figure out why. And then I put two and two together that I had started these. That's how much of a difference I noticed in my energy. So I take them in the morning now and I have absolutely no issue with it. But what a game changer. Like, if you notice that distinct of a difference, what a game changer in quality. Their beef organ complex has grass-fed beef liver, heart, and kidney. So these are really high in CoQ10. They're really high in B vitamins. And kidney actually is going to naturally help with digestion. So what is not to love about this? So I actually pair it with the essential C complex because vitamin C helps you utilize iron better. So I combine both of these, especially for support in pregnancy. I love them. They're my go-tos. I literally have this on subscription with the beef organs because I don't want to run out. Like, I can't run out of those. So I highly recommend, if you are using beef organs or you've been looking into them, but you're kind of grossed out by the taste, definitely give Paleo Valley beef organs a shot. I love them and I will keep using them. They work so well. If you notice that much of a difference in your energy, and I've had multiple people tell me the exact same thing after a week, they're like, I've noticed a difference in my energy. Go for it. It's nature's multivitamin. Just go to paleovalley.com/Leah, or you can just use the coupon code Leah at checkout to save 15%. That's PaleoValley. And the coupon code is LEAH. Okay, so what about methylation? Where, like, let's say, because I see this a lot with women, is like methylation pathways are off. And this is due to, sometimes they're over methylators. I feel like that's a little bit more rare. Typically they're under. But where can they start with food even? Because I think this one becomes a hot topic because people are like, oh, I have MTHFR gene mutation, so I just can't methylate.
Yeah. Great way to get MTHFR gene mutation is to contract COVID. So, yeah, I mean, so, and you hit it. Typically it's under methylating. The big scare there, and I kind of talk about this from a motivational perspective, methylation activates the tumor suppressor gene. So I'm going to say that again so people really grasp it, right? Methylation activates the tumor suppressor gene. So that means when methylation is working properly, we're keeping tumor cells at bay, right? When methylation is not functioning properly, then those mutated cells, the cancer type cells, can run amok and create big problems. And so that's your estrogen dominant, you know, breast cancers and cancers like that. And so we need to really look at, you know, what it is that's compromising methylation. It can be a retrovirus. That's one of the things that sets up and will cause gene mutations, incidentally. And then food-wise or environmental is toxic metals. I mean, that's one of the key pathways where a lot of the toxic metals go. So if somebody's been exposed to a lot of that, whether it's hair care products or, you know, cosmetics or things in the environment, or they work in a toxic environment, or, you know, they live around an area where there's a lot of pesticides. In fact, there's a suit literally in this neighborhood where we've had 3 kids with lymphoma die from cancer, and they're doing a big suit with the, you know, the association that's using the chemicals on the parks and stuff. That we just heard that last night. So those are, I mean, that's an unfortunate example of where this chronic load, putting stress on the methylation pathway leads to potentially bigger challenges. And so again, estrogen, one of the key pathways to break down estrogen is through that methylation pathway. And there you have the 3 different types of estrogen, right? The estrone, estriol, and estradiol. And so if estrone is not metabolizing through methylation, that's a methoxyestrone that runs around. And that's going to cause, from a cancer perspective, it's going to cause a localized cancer. So the good news is that's a lumpectomy type of a problem. Going to the next conversation, potentially, you know, that if P450, another hydroxyestrone, is not metabolizing properly, then that's going to be the oops, it's now in the liver and it's in the, you know, breast tissue and the ovary and the bones. And that's going to be the more of the malignant type of cancer pattern, you know, less, you know, a more ugly sort of pattern. So obviously we want to keep both pathways working well. We can talk more about P450 after we conclude if we ever conclude the methylation discussion. Cortisol is the other thing that will inhibit methylation. So chronic stress can leave methylation underfunctioning as well. So foods that are going to drive methylation is methionine, the amino acid in beef, tuna, and eggs.
Meat, you guys. Yeah. Why do we eat it?
All right. I was like, where are we going to go with this? You know, what's the vibe of the group?
Yeah.
So yes, if you're a vegan or a vegetarian, you may have to take a methionine supplement to facilitate that pathway, especially if you're an O blood type female. O blood types tend to be more methionine dependent. And so you really want to make sure you're getting at least some kind of beef, tuna, or eggs, or a supplement to facilitate that pathway. Other supplements that drive that pathway are B6. So, and of course, folate, you know, which means our vegetables, our green leafies, all that stuff helps drive that pathway. We want to make sure it's organic because, again, pesticides are one of the key toxic metals. Is what is in pesticides. So those toxic metals will inhibit that methylation pathway and, you know, set up the big ugly stuff. So we want to limit pesticides and do our nice organic green leafy veggies and some methionine. Keep that pathway functioning properly.
Yeah. Which, I mean, just to backtrack for a second, like he started with blood sugar balance and stress. And it's like, if you are even focusing on blood sugar balance, you're going to be getting in your protein. You're going to be getting in all those veggies for your fiber. So it's like, that's why sometimes I know we talk about blood sugar balance being so important, but it's like, as we get into the details, even of how to support methylation, it's like, oh, if you're balancing your blood sugar, you're already doing that.
Right. Exactly. The takeaway on the, and part of the reason blood sugar is so really kind of the mother hormone, if you will, insulin causes, for the female, insulin causes estrogen to convert to testosterone. And so that's what sets up the polycystic ovary syndromes, you know, and the male, you know, hair kind of issues and, you know, acne on the back and all those issues. So that's part of where that whole insulin, you know, challenge and conundrum starts, if you will.
Yeah, I agree.
One of the key, because this is probably something unique that I would have to offer from, you know, previous podcasts, the physical areas of pain with that are going to be, when it's blood sugar causing hormonal issues, it's going to be pain on the outside of the elbow. So think of your tennis elbow, or maybe now what we would call pickleball elbow.
Yeah.
So there's a hormone tonification point right on the outside of the elbow. And it's typically going to be, you know, the opposite ovary that's stressing and referring pain there. And so
because of blood sugar balance,
blood insulin causing the hormone estrogen dominance, right? And so that refers pain to the outside of the elbow.
Dang. So can you use that as a pressure point? Like, is that something you could
yes.
do?
Mm-hmm. So that's the next step, right? So you can get temporary relief with it. You can rub that point on the elbow, and that'll, you know, maybe help reduce some of your PMS symptoms, right? Or, you know, the back aches that you might get, or, you know, some of those things, ovary pain. The muscle that goes along with that is the glute medius muscle, which is right along the top of the kind of just below the belt line for you ladies. That muscle will get weak and tender when the same side, in anatomy terms, it's the ipsilateral, the same side ovary. So right ovary is going to cause that glute medius muscle to be weak and tender when we have hormone issues. And to back up a little bit, the most common food that's going to set up ovarian cysts and cause pain in these two areas is corn, believe it or not. So
how come? Why do you say that?
Yeah, I mean, mostly because it's all GMO, genetically modified in America, but it also tends to have kind of a cortisol dumping response, as well as the insulin glycogen concerns. So it's amazing. It's a massive trigger. As so sensitive that, I mean, I had a O blood type female that was very clean on the diet, and she started eating these rice chips in the evening. And by the third day, she had an ovarian cyst grow and burst, and then realized that corn was the third ingredient on these rice chips, you know, seemingly healthy, you know, snack. So, I mean, that's just a great example of how sensitive the body can be to something like that.
That's really interesting, because I know, for example, like a lot of companies will use maltodextrin in products, and maltodextrin actually has a very high glycemic index, very high. And a lot of times it's derived from corn, depending on obviously where their sourcing is from. And I think that's just interesting because that's in a lot of like quote unquote, like low sugar products, but like
totally
it's really low sugar.
Well, I mean, I'm a exercise junkie, and I mean, I race bikes, and so a lot of the products that we're supposed to be consuming during bike rides, the first ingredient's maltodextrin. So, you know, I'm like, no, I'm not going to eat it. That limits, you know, the training products I can use, you know, by 70%.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's even not that I want to get into controversy, but like Element T just, you know, they just got slammed for the amount of like maltodextrin they actually have in their products versus what they said they had in there.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Keep an eye out for that.
I know. That's very interesting. Okay. So glute medius. So I have a question then. So then would strengthening the glute medius do anything to help this, or is it that it doesn't work backwards that way?
It would not work ultimately because the muscle is neurologically inhibited. We call it conditionally inhibited.
Okay.
So you could, you know, go to the gym and do your abductor, ABD, abductor muscles where, you know, you try to do your pushing the hip out. Yes, functionally, that's going to try to strengthen it, but the muscle's not going to contract. You're not really going to get value out of that training until the muscle's contracting properly. So, I mean, potentially rub the elbow, but in backing it up when your elbow hurts, you ate something that whacked your blood sugar and is skewing the hormones. So my personal example on that was a road. I keep getting y'all excited. Carrying on. Sorry.
Okay. No, you're fine. That's
I was on a road trip years ago and, you know, started getting sleepy as I'm, you know, driving 6 hours or something. And went to, you know, to get gas and got some green tea to, you know, stay awake while I was driving. Literally on the second sip, my elbow was throbbing and pulsing. And it was like, what the heck? And I, you know, second ingredients, maltodextrin, you know, high fructose corn. Well, actually it was high fructose corn syrup. And it's like, well, I guess I'm not using this to stay awake. So it can be that sensitive and that immediate.
Well, I mean, we know our body's that sensitive. I have, people with celiac, like even cross contamination of gluten and stuff, they'll immediately have that reaction. So I'm going to rephrase to make sure I have this. So basically blood sugar goes off, which is then impacting the hormones, the points where you would notice that would be your elbow and weak glute meats, which I also think is interesting because, my husband's a physical therapist. And so whenever like someone says something about like low back pain or their knee hurts or something like that, he's like, oh, well, you probably have an issue like with your glute meats. Like we need to strengthen them. And now I'm over here wondering like now we come full circle and maybe they have weak glute meats because they spike their blood sugar.
This is where he needs to bring you in, huh?
Yeah. I'm like, let's talk about this.
The other physical manifestation of the high fructose, just to kind of pull it all together for you, sugar in general, sugar feeds yeast. And so the other physical manifestations there is the valve on the same, either the ileocecal valve, which is on the right side, or the valve of Houston, which is on the left. One or both of those valves are going to open up to try to get the carbs out of there before they ferment and create problems. The physical manifestation of that is sacroiliac pain. In other words, pain that, you know, like hurts when you sit too long or that sort of stuff. That SI joint is going to get more weak and unstable with this yeast overgrowth. Because of that, then the muscles on the same side of the neck will turn off. So if you eat a carbohydrate that doesn't sit well, doesn't metabolize well, it's going to feed yeast. And literally, I mean, I've had some protein bars that were sweetened inappropriately or whatever. By the time I'm done with the bar, that side of my neck will be hurting. Or like I talked about ride food, I borrowed a friend's ride food when I was on this long ride one time. And within 10 minutes, my neck was yelling at me. So what's happening there is that carbohydrates feeding the yeast, turns off the neck extensors on the one side and gives us an immediate input or immediate feedback that did not work well. The other thing that makes all this worse is with estrogen dominance, estrogen is fairly acidifying. So it's going to make you ladies, unfortunately, more sensitive to carbohydrates, right? You crave carbs when, you know, during the cycle, right? And so that's that whole mechanism that's going on there is the estrogen acidifies so that then when you eat, the system's more conducive to yeast overgrowth. Yeast causes carbohydrate cravings, and around the poor girls go and chasing the tail.
Yeast is interesting too. Like yeast is such a beast to get rid of.
It is.
So can I come off topic for a second here? I have a question.
All right.
So when you said the SI joint, is there a correlation with this with pregnancy? So how come like women who are pregnant always have SI joint pain? Are we coming full circle here because they're more insulin resistant naturally because they're pregnant due to the placenta? And then it is correlated with blood sugar, or is it just no, like things are moving around and reshaping because you're pregnant and it's just a thing?
So adrenal glandulars are one of the most common supplements I have most of the pregnant girls on. Adrenals are the other thing that will cause an instability in the sacroiliac joint. When the adrenals are under functioning, that's where the miscarriages happen because the adrenals will then, you know, you're so fun to talk with.
Sorry. I'm so glad. This is highly, highly educational. I have a notebook.
You're awesome. So the pregnenolone steel or the cortisol, you know, shunt, if you will, the body will, you know, progesterone needs to exponentially go up to maintain pregnancy. And so if the body's not handling stress well, it's going to shunt that progesterone over to make cortisol to get us to make the stress hormones. And so if the adrenals are struggling, then the girl doesn't end up producing enough progesterone. It's a struggle to maintain the pregnancy, and the physical manifestations of adrenal. Well, one of the symptomatic challenges is nausea. So it affects the gallbladder and it sets up the nausea. So I find giving a good adrenal glandular product, keeps that nausea down, enhances the quality of the pregnancy. Babies are healthier because mom's not stealing. So the unfortunate, it's going to be a stress for some of you moms, that the more stressed the adrenals are, the earlier in childhood, the baby will have asthma, allergies, or eczema, because mom starts stealing off the baby's adrenals third try to sustain the pregnancy. So, I mean, that's the bad news. The good news is now you know it. So start working to rebuild the adrenals, the child's adrenals, to get, you know, to get some resolution on the asthma, allergies, or eczema. Moms, if you're looking at being pregnant, be on an adrenal during pregnancy. Take a good adrenal glandular. Usually there's I've got 20 or 30 different adrenal products in the office, but it's typically a glandular that works in this scenario. So
that's cool.
The physical manifestations, we talked about the nausea and so on that goes on, and the blood sugar yo-yos, and keeping the adrenals right is going to help keep the pregnancy weight more, you know, managed and in control. The physical manifestations of adrenal fatigue is a pain on the inside of the knee. The two muscles that get weak with adrenals, the sartorius and the gracilis, those both attach to the inside of the knee. So like the medial meniscus problems that your husband's seeing as a physical therapist, those are chronic adrenal fatigue, because the inner knee becomes unsupported because of the weakness from the chronic adrenal problems. The other muscle that gets weak is the posterior tibialis, which causes the arch to start collapsing. So that's that internal rotation of the leg every time a person steps down, you know, and leads to, you know, plantar fasciitis, you know, ultimately leads to bunions or heel spurs. Those are all adrenal problems. Those are the long-term manifestations of this chronic adrenal challenge. You know, the short-term is, you know, during pregnancy, you know, mom's going to need to feed those adrenals to get through properly and have a beautiful, healthy child.
That is so cool. So if you do an adrenal glandular, I know you can't give like specific dosage to people and stuff, but what amount of like milligrams are you looking for in like bovine glandular during pregnancy?
Yeah, I mean, if we can use standard process as an example, depending on how stressed the person is, maybe three tablets. They've created a stronger tablet now. So one, typically. The new Drenamin is about three times, that's a bigger tablet, and it's about equal to what three of the tablets used to be. So if we're using, I'm talking glandular. So Drenamin's one of the options, but more typically I would be looking at adrenal desiccated standard process, which probably would be one to more likely three tablets in the morning on that type of product. There's a couple other companies that make similar glandular products that also tend to work very well.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Do you ever find then that they need like the counter at nighttime, like something like very like relaxing or anything at nighttime, or no?
The frontal headaches that we talked about, my favorite supplement for that is ashwagandha, which is kind of where you're leaning with that question. So ashwagandha is more typically for a hypercortisol manifestation. So I test how much a person needs as, you know, clinically. So I don't necessarily see that, but if a person's guessing and maybe took too much adrenal glandular, then they're still revved at night, then they might need, you know, ashwagandha or something. But I look at those as different animals ultimately. Typically what we're talking about is a hypoadrenal problem or a chronic cortisol depletion. Whereas, you know, somebody that's still revved up at night is more typically going to be like, you know, that sulfation Lyme kind of pattern that I just talked about, or just they're not handling stress properly. And so they're stuck in that chronic cortisol conundrum. As long as we're throwing pearls out, another trigger for that chronic cortisol where the person's having trouble shutting it down at night and has digestive issues, that's often a manifestation of an old concussion or multiple old concussions.
Oh.
The metabolic byproduct of a concussion, of neurodegeneration, is glutamate. So glutamate's the excitatory brain chemical, right? Think of how a person feels if they eat, you know, MSG, go out to eat a bunch of Chinese food. That's kind of what's going on all day long for a person that's still reeling from an old concussion. And that shuts down microglia, which is the kind of, think of like as if the white blood cells of the brain, the microglia are that protective mechanism. So that gets shut down. And that's why subsequent concussions are more ominous or more damaging, because that protective mechanism had been compromised. So in that case, you know, we want to use herbs or things to heal, or to, you know, EFAs are beautiful in that, you know, scenario. My middle daughter was a soccer goalkeeper. So I always, you know, I always had her on omega-3s, you know, high DHA type omega-3s, just anticipating that she's going to get clogged again at some point. So that was the preventative. It's also part of the treatment kind of deal. Turmeric or boswellia, you know, are nice herbs to work that through. Lion's mane is a nice mushroom that's gotten a lot of popularity for those concussions. A buddy of mine makes a Great Minds is his new company. He makes a lion's mane with lithium in it that I find to be really rock solid for post-concussion or old concussions, because lithium is a mineral that has been shown to raise those, that microglia, and get that protective mechanism kind of restored.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Which makes sense, because like if you have really low lithium, you're typically not a great detoxer either. So,
and suicidal ideations.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, yeah. That's very cool. Okay. There are two mushrooms that have just truly been such a game changer for some of my clients. And I wanted to share them with you because I think that you will start to notice a difference with these as well. We don't talk about these two enough, so we're going to talk about them some more, because they're not the I am boosting libido and energy mushrooms, which are fun and exciting. These are the mushrooms that work silently behind the scenes and just change your life. So one of those is lion's mane. I have a lot of clients with Lyme disease and mold, and you know, that can really do a number on our mental health and anxiety and our sleep. And lion's mane is really high in ergothionine, which is very, very useful for helping your brain detox. So I actually recommend taking it before bed. I started doing that, I don't know, quite a few months ago. And I can't recommend it enough. Like, definitely give it a shot and see how you feel with that. If you want more focus and mental clarity, I would do it in the morning. You can't really go wrong, but the other one that I pair it with, so I like pairing these two together, is chaga. Now, the reason why is chaga is known for its sky-high antioxidant content. And what does antioxidants do? What do? They fight inflammation. Now, when inflammation is chronic and uncontrolled, it leads to that oxidative stress, cellular damage. And chaga is literally one of the foods that has the highest antioxidant content ever, ever. And when we think of chronic gut inflammation, inflammatory bowel disease, any type of inflammation, it's fueled by something called TNF-alpha, which is one of your inflammatory markers. And research shows that chaga can naturally lower TNF-alpha levels. That's insane. And I have literally been pairing these two with so many of my clients, the chaga and the lion's mane, and they are just telling me, oh my goodness, my mental health is so much better. I have so much more clarity. My sleep is so much better. You know, they don't feel so in pain and puffy and all of these things. I just, such a powerhouse. Now, you guys know I talk about this. It's so important to make sure you're getting the correct dosage of these to actually be getting these benefits. And that's why I use Aversio Wellness, because most companies out there, they're giving you 500 milligrams, which isn't anywhere near the therapeutic dosage that you need to actually see these benefits. And so Aversio Wellness has such a high extraction ratio with their mushroom, and they use fruiting body only. And so I can take one capsule of chaga, one capsule, and reach the therapeutic dosage that I need to see these benefits versus having to take a million of them. So one of their jars of chaga is a 2-month supply. So literally so worth it. Lion's mane and chaga. So lion's mane, they call Focus Now, and chaga, they call Protect Now. It's going to be the blue and the teal jars. So go to eversiowellness.com. That's E-V-E-R-S-I-O wellness.com and use the coupon code Leah to save 15% on every order, which is literally incredible. So we went all directions. Now I need to come back. So
sorry.
That's okay. This is why I was taking notes. So we're still on the both sides of the head headache, poor estrogen metabolization. We went through methylation and cortisol. Can we touch on glucuronidation a little bit? Just because I find that one very, very interesting because most women are not super great at it.
Yeah. So the primary thing to affect glucuronidation is hypothyroidism. So most of the T4 gets converted through glucuronidation. I mean, I have reflex points all over the liver for each of these pathways. That's kind of how I've been able to figure out or correlate the physical manifestations with each pathway. So the glucuronidation, the typical thing that causes that to underfunction is hypothyroid. So that's kind of that vicious cycle, right? Because estrogen can inhibit the thyroid, low thyroid can inhibit glucuronidation. Then we've got, you know, round and round we go. So I was kind of saving glucuronidation for when we got to the tension headaches or the suboccipital headaches. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, so if we've got chronic insulin inhibiting T4 conversion, the T4 is the inactive thyroid hormone that needs to convert to the active T3 hormone to give us energy and you know, stoke metabolism and so on. That also activates digestive enzymes, which is part of how the thyroid stokes metabolism or, you know, stimulates metabolism. So that's the mechanism for the suboccipital headaches ultimately. So for glucuronidation, I'm typically looking at things like selenium to help actively convert the T4 to T3. Nutrients like that mostly are looking for toxins. Mercury is a very common toxin to inhibit T4 conversion. So do we have old fillings or, you know, they eaten too much fish or tattoos, you know, old tattoos tended to have mercury in them. So we want to look for the triggers or what has been inhibiting T4 conversion for glucuronidation.
That's just an never-ending circle, isn't it? Because like you need your gut, you need glucuronidation, you need your liver for T4 to T3 conversion to happen in the first place. But like if those aren't happening, then it affects the liver more, and then it affects the thyroid more, and then you have this circle where they're like, I'm doing all of the things, but like they need to stop the cycle because it just keeps feeding each other.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up a great example that I forgot to pull up on the methylation journey. The lactobacillus organisms are the body's production, is how the body produces B12. So if our gut biome is off, then we become B12 deficient. B12 is the primary methylator for the methylation pathway. So gut biome's off, then methylation goes down, and we've got all those symptoms to go along with it. So yeah, feed that gut biome with healthy vegetables. I mean, I like to, one of my meals a day is a smoothie with blended vegetables and things in there, because those blended vegetables are even better. In addition to vegetables, they're really good at stimulating the butyrate that is, you know, protective for, you know, preventing the leaky gut symptoms, and which ultimately is arthritis and that whole, you know, brain fog, another discussion again, but
I love butyrate. I hate smoothies in the winter though. It's like, I'm already cold, you know, I don't need to add to it.
Yeah. I guess I live in Southern California. It's not as much of an issue.
Yeah. No, I'm in Michigan, and when it's like negative 11 with the wind chill, yeah, like, I'm not drinking a smoothie.
I guess you're going for soup, huh?
Yeah. Soup's a great way to like stick it in. The other way that honestly I think is super easy is, I love sauteing, or like, well, I'll bake my veggies, because like when you cook down like, you know, leafy greens, I mean, you can have like this massive thing and it just kind of cooks down and you can just scramble it whatever you want. Okay. So since we kind of touched on tension headaches, can we go right back to tension headaches with a little bit of the thyroid, any information you have there? And I mean, we could keep talking, but my team will kill me if I send them like an hour-long episode. So I want to touch on the tension headaches. And then I do just want to touch on the pituitary one a little bit before we end. So any other nuggets you want to give us with tension, headaches, and low thyroid?
In the next 3 minutes.
Yeah, you're
fine. So pituitary secretes, one of the hormones it makes is TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. So pituitary tells the thyroid what to do. If the thyroid is, so anything that compromises the pituitary, then we'd be looking at, you know, correcting that. That's going to be the central headache there, cyclops headache. Those are probably the least common of the seven headaches. Interestingly, yeah. Manganese is a mineral that helps feed the pituitary. Typically, I mean, the most common thing I use is the pituitrophin PMG, again, the genetic, the protomorphogen. I call it genetic rebuilding material for the pituitary in that case. But E-manganese, especially for the anterior pituitary, or some of the other companies make anterior pituitary products specifically to feed that. So that's, you know, the quick summary on the cyclops headache. So if we've got this, the cyclops or the pituitary working properly, then the thyroid, if that's not functioning properly, then that causes because the thyroid activates enzymes, the enzyme deficiency is what causes the neck pain. So, I mean, think of all how many times we hear, you know, it's the plight of the auto accident I had. You know, I got rear-ended 20 years ago and my neck's been hurting ever since, right? And ultimately, we get the thyroid corrected. The thyroid, incidentally, I talked about enzyme issues causing the neck extensors to turn off. I also find the scalene, the anterior scalene muscle, which is in the front of the neck, that helps support, make that positive arch in the neck. When it's working properly, when it's not, then we get the straighter neck and a lot of the neck tension in there. From a chiropractic perspective, the C4, the fourth cervical vertebra in the neck, will go out when the thyroid's not functioning right. So these are all physical areas of thyroid deficiency. There's a rotator cuff muscle called the teres minor that's going to get weak when the thyroid's not functioning properly. And then we've got all the digestive issues, you know, and then hair loss, the hallmark symptoms of low thyroid is hair loss, depression and weight gain, right? And again, the weight gain is because the thyroid regulates metabolism. Part of that is through enzyme facilitating production of proteolytic enzymes to help us break down our proteins and so on. So that's the mechanism that sets up the tension headaches. So we want to look at why is the thyroid not functioning right. Fluoride, unfortunately, is in a lot of the municipal waters. I'm told, I heard something in the recent election that RFK is going to be on a bandwagon to get the fluoride out of all of our municipal waters. You know, that, praise God, we need that. Yeah.
Go for it.
Please, yeah. So, yes. So fluoride tends to inhibit the thyroid. So if that's the case, then we want to look at iodine to offset or kind of leave nowhere for the fluoride to bond. My loving mom fed me fluoride tablets as a kid, you know, before I quit eating sugar at 14, you know, I was, you know, I had two cavities every 6 months when I go in. And so the dentist says, you know, take the little blue pill, the fluoride. And so this is the most diligent thing I remember my mom doing for my health was the fluoride tablets. And that caused hair loss and kind of changed the color of my teeth ultimately. So I've been ever since trying to offset, you know, and compensate for that. So, and then mercury, I had, you know, the mold amalgam fillings as a kid. So having to get those removed and get the fluoride out of my system, to help me be my best. I mean, I went down for the count when I went on a kick at one point where I was eating a couple pieces of fish every day for lunch. And often it was mahi-mahi or, you know, some of the bottom dweller type fish. And I ended up, you know, overloaded on mercury and I couldn't hardly function. And so lithium is the mineral fine to offset and get rid of, help push out the mercury. So that's, if you know that you have mercury issues, then lithium would be a great mineral. Again, The Promise of Lithium is a great book that goes on, you know, talks about how the benefits of lithium. The little book called The Promise of Lithium talks mostly about lithium for Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. But it's great. So where do we covered iodine? Tyrosine is the amino acid that, you know, T4 we talked about is tyrosine with 4-iodine. So we want to make sure we have tyrosine to feed the thyroid.
And if anyone wants to know where tyrosine comes from, it's meat again.
So. Yes, there's a theme here.
Yep, there's a theme.
So sometimes there's multiple headaches. And so we want to look for the common thread with those multiple headaches. So the common thread for the bitemporal headache, for the suboccipital headache, and for left-sided headache, you know, that's a very common pattern where they have all three, left-sided headache, suboccipital headache, and bitemporal headaches. The common thread for all of those is vitamin B1. Thiamine helps make stomach acid. Thiamine helps activate thyroid hormones, and thiamine helps break down estrogen. So if you have, that's a pattern I discussed in the book several times, where that would be the common thread for all those. And so all the headaches have, you know, if there's multiple headaches, that's the fun thing clinically, is to identify the common thread for all of them. You know, is it corn, or is it a nutrient deficiency, or that sort of stuff.
That's cool about thiamine, because we bring that in. We see that a lot when clients have high copper. Like, they don't detox copper well, liver is congested, and that would make sense with why they would have those types of headaches too, because they're obviously going to have estrogen dominance if they have high copper. So
totally. And another fun symptom of, if they could call it that, fun symptom of or unique symptom of thiamine deficiency is the mosquitoes like the person. So the person
makes, Landa.
Yeah.
That's so the person. Me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mosquitoes eat me alive. Like my family is like, if you don't want to get eaten, if you go outside, just sit next to Leah, because I will get eaten alive.
Send you out first, huh? So the mechanism there is thiamine helps break down aldehydes. So, you know, think of formaldehyde. So the chemical sensitivity when you redecorate, or those types of, you know, new bedding and so on that typically has formaldehyde in it, or clothing. So thiamine will help break down that formaldehyde. When formaldehyde is not, or aldehydes are not broken down properly, you smell a person. Well, I guess you smell more fruity to the mosquito. So that's why they're more attracted to you. So the person with adequate thiamine dose levels would not smell so fruity, and mosquitoes are uninterested.
That's cool. Well, I guess when I'm not pregnant, I'll see if I need to bring in some more B1.
Right. Meat, right?
Yeah. I eat a lot of that.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay. Do you have any lasting words or thoughts that you would like to tell everyone? I'm going to let them know that you can get Dr. V's book on Amazon. Just go to Amazon. It's called The Headache Advantage, and you can just grab it right there.
Easy peasy. So it's available in hardcover, softcover, and Kindle, whatever your format of choice. And I'm currently working on the audio version, and Spanish version will be forthcoming as well.
That will be awesome. All right. Where can everybody find you?
Headacheadvantage.com is the website for the book. In there right now, there's links to each of the seven patterns of headaches that then goes into flow charts to help a person figure out, you know, they resonate with, you know, column one, then, you know, look at potentially choline, or stop eating tomatoes, or, you know, these types of things. Ultimately, I'm working on a product line to go along with the book. So eventually, you know, on that website, there'll be specific product, you know, either packages or bottles specific for each of the seven headache patterns. So that would be the place to find links to things as they develop. And the book is listed there again, but on Amazon as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll pop it in the show notes.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming on.
So fun.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Balancing Hormones Naturally. If you found this helpful, I would love for you to share it with a friend and post it on your stories and tag Balancing Hormones Naturally podcast so we can get this message out. You can find me on Instagram @Leah_BRUEG, and I would absolutely love to hear from you.